nobody's puncturing my earlobes over there. You got to have your full complement. We're getting a cheese plate to start, Steve. Little cheese plate. Little camembert. Then I might go for the duck. I'm a duck man, the creme brulee. I've never thought about it. Brooklyn guys don't do that. Last call at Golden Corral, Steve. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Buccaneers fans, 10-3, the Ira Kaufman podcast. It's as good as the Bucs. Winners of 18 of their last 21 games. The Sage is all fired up. He's wearing his Giovanni Bernard jersey, even with the broken hip. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucs Fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucs Fan is here. All the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Right now, Ira, your trade-in is worth more than ever, because used vehicles are worth more than ever, and GM Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford is ready to help you. He'll buy your vehicle even if you don't want a new one, and check out all the transparent pricing and the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles at BillCurryFord.com. Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E, that is the family name, 61 years, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Our buddy Sean Sullivan, draft guru, the best-in-class podcast host. He loves Bucks fans. He's ready for you, Ira. You know how Sean is. He just can't wait to meet another Bucks fan and tell them all about the great things they do at Bill Curry Ford, including the body shop and the amazing service. All right, Ira. Now, look, the Buccaneers, now they're officially the number two seed after wiping out the Bills in a scary fashion there. Plenty to talk about out of the game. But they're sitting at the number two seed, tied with the Packers and the Cardinals, who lost to the Rams. And hopefully they can get ahead on these tiebreakers and find their way to the number one seed. Ira, the state of the Bucks, your feeling coming out of that roller coaster wild ride at the stadium?
All right, gents, a couple of general points that I must make in this podcast. One, with 30 seconds left in regulation, I thought the Bucs were going to lose that game. I thought they were going to lose that game. Having said that, and it came down to a Carlton Davis, Stephon Diggs battle in the left corner, and you could argue that they could have thrown a flag. And if Buffalo has the ball a yard or two out with Josh Allen and a play or two left, I think the Bucs are in a lot of trouble. Having said that, and here's where DeCamper can't wait to jump in and say, what are you talking about, Ira? We're so used to figuring out why did the Bucs screw up. The Bucs did this. The Bucs did that. Lee, when that game ended, I got to tell you, my main takeaway was about Josh Allen. The Bucs didn't turn the ball over. The Bucs didn't have too many penalties. It wasn't like they gave the Bills all of the second half with their own mistakes. Josh Allen was tremendous, Lee. He would not let that team lay down. He showed why he was second in the league in MVP voting last year to Aaron Rodgers. He's not having the same year. Lee, he almost single-handedly won that game for Buffalo. Single-handedly. So I give that guy a tremendous amount of credit. And I think, Lee, he exposed one thing about the Bucs that we all have to agree on at this moment. This defense is okay. It's not any better than okay. That's all it is, Lee. It's an okay defense. And there's quite a few teams right now in this league that are playing better defense than the Bucs.
The one word you used about Josh Allen was the key word. And, yeah, Josh Allen's a very good quarterback. Who didn't know that, number one? But you know what? You play to win the game. Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Almost. Didn't get the job done. Looked good at a hell of a half. A half. He didn't get the job done. What I came out of that was Rashard Perriman, a guy that left here 2 years ago, wasn't good enough for the lousy Lions, wasn't good enough for the bungling Bears, comes to the Bucks, they know how to use him. We lived through this. Guys like Shiano, how many good players did Shiano and Mark Domnick get rid of, just give away, if not just cut, wound up on other teams, had excellent years, were major contributors to Super Bowl teams or playoff teams. Lovie Smith the same way. Arians comes in, he knows how to use players. His coaches know how to use players. They know how to see talent. They know how to get the most out of that talent. What is the common denominator between the Bears, the Lions? Wasn't there a third team that Perriman was with? And I'm slipping my mind, but that third team is also garbage. Those teams didn't win it. They all cut and released Perriman. He comes back to the Bucks just like he did 2 years ago. Had success. That was my big takeaway out of the game. As far as the defense, I don't think they were exposed. We've seen this for, 2 months now? Whenever one of their starting cornerbacks goes out, this defense crumbles. Arians admitted it post-game when he said they had to continue to mix and match when Dean went down. Today on the Dole Patrick Show, he said when Dean went down, they started having to play more zone defense. When they were playing man defense, they were able to rush the passer so much better. When they went to zone, Allen was able to get rid of the ball quicker. So for whatever reason, this team loses one starting cornerback, and it goes to a below-average defense. And it's kind of confusing and really sad that one player or one position, you lose one guy, whether it's Carlton Davis, whether it's Bunting, whether it's Jamel Dean, one of those guys goes out and the roof caves in on him.
Steve, I thought Todd Bowles is the master of making adjustments. Steve, what's going on here? You got to have your full complement of cornerbacks to play rudimentary defense?
Arians explained this a bit on his radio show Tuesday night, Ira. Essentially, Bowles' packages, his blitz packages, and what they bring to the table as an advanced plan for every game is so complex that if a starting cornerback goes down, the guy filling in has not practiced these packages very much during the week to the point where they feel they can trust him to know exactly what to do because they're so tailored and so specific to the week. So he said a guy like Dean goes down and whoever you're sticking in there just hasn't had the reps on all the different cornerback packages specific to the player. It makes sense, but it's also kind of like, hey, man, you know, injuries happen. Maybe you shouldn't be so crazy hyper-specific, but we've seen it happen over and over again, and that was Arian's explanation.
Lee, before we compare Jamel Dean to Jalen Ramsey over here, DeKemper, I got to take a little bit of umbrage with what you said, Lee, about your main takeaway. The guy made one play. Now, yep. It was the game winner in overtime. He made one play. And, Lee, before we compare him to Davante Adams, I will point out to you that Tom Brady makes everybody look good. When he was in New England, they started talking about Chris Hogan as the next outstanding receiver. You never heard his name again.
I don't understand what your point is.
Well, Lee, by extension, you might, in a crazy way, be arguing that they should dump Antonio Brown because they have a capable substitute in Perriman, and Brown lied to the organization, so get rid of him because we got a substitute.
Have you been sampling the Manischewitz again, Ira? I never even suggested that Perriman is anything close to Brown. I mean, I've had a couple of people ask me that. Oh, you know, Perriman had this touchdown, so maybe that makes Antonio Brown more expendable. I'm like, calm down. Calm down. Come on now.
And Arians still isn't telling us what his plans are for Antonio Brown. Now, that's a fact.
Going back to the game, you said the big play. You thought the Bills were going to win. 3rd and 3, Josh Allen incomplete, Stephon Diggs, Carlton Davis is all over him.
A lot of contact.
Diggs complained a little bit, but not a lot. And nothing crazy, but a lot of contact. And that's the kind of, you know, I think in some ways, Carlton Davis plays that way all the time. And so it sort of softens the refs up a little later in the game. It's like, hey, he's a high contact guy. But regardless, my question for you is, 4th and 3 after that play, they kick a field goal.
Yeah.
With 25 seconds left. If you're Buffalo, don't you just say, you know, the hell with it. Let's just go for it. Maybe we'll get a first down or maybe we'll get a touchdown right here. 4th and 3. We may not get a better shot to win the game.
But, Steve, they're at the 7. They were at the 7.
But it was 4th and 3. 4th and 3.
I understand that. No, Steve, I think you're way off. McDermott did what every coach in this league would do. They had all the momentum. The Bucs didn't have enough time to do anything after that field goal. They didn't try to do anything. So this game was going to go into overtime, and McDermott, Lee, every reason to think Buffalo was going to win the overtime. Every reason. The Bucs looked dead on their feet, but the defense made a stop, and Brady's Brady. So, and end of story. There could have been a flag with Carlton Davis, Lee, and you know, you're on Twitter as much as I am. There are some pictures of Carlton Davis grabbing guys' shirts left and right with no calls.
Yep.
He's a very good corner. He's a good corner, but he really straddles that line, Lee, a lot of times.
Yeah, he gets handsy at times. So, hey, good teams sometimes are the benefactor of luck, and they got lucky there. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Ira, I think the Bucs were lucky that the Bills did not go for it on 4th and 3 with all the momentum right there and a big quarterback who can, you know, lean forward for a yard and a half and is a handful. I was just so happy, so ecstatic when they kicked that field goal. I'm like, they're handing away a chance to win the game. But speaking of handing away chances to win the game, Ira, I got to ask you guys this question, just another spot in that game. It's the third quarter. The Bills fail on their fake punt, okay? And the Bucs get incredible field position, right? They're winning 24-3 still, and they get this incredible field position at the Buffalo 42-yard line. And you think, okay, move the chains and at least kick a field goal, and you might put the game away right here. And sure enough, they can't get a first down. They get to the Buffalo 34-yard line, Sage, and that's a 52-yard field goal, and they don't take it. And they were winning 24-3. You're in full command, and you can take the points right there, maybe put the game away, because they didn't know the Bills were going to come back. At this point, the Bills had done nothing all day. Does it worry you going ahead to the playoffs? And this is where our focus is, that they can't kick a 52-yard field goal at home in pristine conditions.
So what'd they do, punt?
No, they went for it on 4th and 3, and they 4th and 2.5 or so, and incomplete to Cameron Brate.
Well, Steve, you should like the idea of going for it on 4th and 2. Steve, you should. Rather than suck up maybe 50-50, Lee, from that distance, maybe the odds are better than 50-50 that you're going to make a 4th and 2. We'll see what the analytic boys have to say. Lee, you know what really struck me also in the second half, besides Josh Allen, from a Buck perspective? Lee, the running game stunk in the second half. It did. Fournette had a 21-yard run. He did. He had a 21-yard run in the second half. That was it. They would run on first down, Lee, and get 1 yard. They'd run on first down and get no gain. They were getting pushed around. This offensive line was getting pushed around by Buffalo's front seven on defense throughout the second half. And that's a concern. Lee, one of the great examples of a strong running game is run when they know you're going to run. The Bucs couldn't do that on Sunday. That's a little disconcerting. Having said all that, Lee, they're 10-3.
Yeah.
If the Packers stumble, and there's no guarantee the Packers are going to win out, and I believe the Bucs will win out, I do, to go 14-3, and if the Pack stumbles, you're looking at the number one seed in the NFC. The Bucs are the prohibitive favorites to raise the Vince Lombardi trophy. What more can you ask for, Lee?
You gave me a lot to work with there, Ivor. I'm not locking up a win against the Saints. Until they get over this regular season hex, it's a hex. And, we saw what they did against a completely trash quarterback. For whatever reason, the Saints have their number in the regular season. So I'm not locking it up as a W in any way, shape, or form. I'm just not. You said so much, and I can only think of one thing now.
They couldn't run the second half. No running game.
Then don't run. I mean, duh. It's like, hey, the guy can't hit a fastball. Well, throw him a fastball then. It's like, duh. It's not like they don't have any wide receivers. Not like they can't block up front. Not like they have a lousy quarterback. Not like they don't have a tight end.
They're trying to work the clock, Lee. They're trying to work the clock.
You can't run. Don't beat your head up against the wall. It's not like they have Dante Dye and Freddie Martino. It's not like those guys are their wide receivers. Well, here's what almost gave me the shivers in a good way this morning. We've gone through the lost decade. We've gone through just awful, awful, awful football. And by the way, Perriman was also released by the Jets. So those are the three teams that couldn't find a way to use him. The Jets, the Lions, the Bears. Losers lose because they're losers. And speaking of losers, the Bucs were prohibitive losers for too many freaking years. The lost decade, it was just some god-awful football. And so this morning I'm on Twitter and I read the following. The Bucs have the best record in the NFL. I had to do a double take. But it's accurate. The Bucs have the best record. Here we are, 2 weeks from Christmas, and the Bucs have the best record in the NFL. That sounds so surreal. It almost sounds like a Star Trek episode.
Ira, I'm with you on the running game because, I mean, we cannot call this offensive line in the elite, put them in the elite category that everybody wants to put them in, and I think they can be and should be in there if they just can't run the ball to win a game out, because that we saw them do it last year. This is what I'm talking about, playoff mentality, because that's where we are, as Lee just painted, best team in football. There's no question this year that they're making the playoffs, that they're going to have a home game, all that stuff. And they got to be able to do this because that's just kind of what you do. And I'll read you the second half runs, Ira. 2 yards, second half only. 2 yards, 9 yards, 1 yard, negative 2, 2, 0, 7, 21. And okay, so they had those back-to-back 7-21. Then they got away from the running game and finally started to work. Then they pulled the plug on it. And then when they went when they went back to it after the 21-yarder, when they finally went back to it, they got 1 yard, 4 yards, 3 yards, and 1 yard. And so that's 12 runs. You only got 3 runs with more than 4 yards there. It's just not very good, Ira.
And I didn't expect it, Lee, the way Fournette's been going. He's been so good. You know, I said right now he's a top five back. I never thought I'd be saying that about Fournette in a Buck uniform. I asked Arians, you know, does it seem like another century ago that you had your little chat with Fournette from your golf cart? You told Fournette, just say the word, we'll cut you right now. That's a hell of a man-on-man talk. And Fournette's been a different guy ever since. Lee, I don't know what the hell else Arians told him, but he should bottle it and sell it in the store.
By the way, Ira, I got to get this. I got to get this figured out while you mentioned it. I got to get this figured out. You were part of that book that Arians wrote, or not Arians wrote, but Lars Anderson wrote about the Bucks last year.
Yeah.
Leonard Fournette is on record saying this discussion, for lack of a better phrase, with Arians, took place on a team airplane.
I believe it was practice. I believe it was practice. Because the reason that spurred the conversation was Fournette's attitude during practice. And he was disinterested, absolutely disinterested.
So could Fournette have been referring to a second confrontation?
Yes.
Hey, Ira, you know, the Buccaneers right now, they're the number 2 seed, okay, which would mean
right. Number
1 seed would get the bye, which the Bucs could really use the bye with their veteran roster. But if you get the number 2 seed, you're going to have a home game and you're going to play the number 7 seed. So fans always want to know what the sage thinks, right? When you're walking around Publix and you're, picking out rye bread and that sort of stuff, somebody comes up to you and says, hey, Ira, what do you think? Well, who do you think we're going to face in the playoffs? Who do you want to face? So that
I was in there 3 times today, Isbitz. 3 times. I got people at the counter, the cashiers. You again? I keep forgetting stuff. Steve, I'm getting old.
Your lottery tickets?
I never understand what's going on there, Ari. You got 2 people at home. Your wife eats like a very normal person. You know, she's not like you. Not like you at all. Yeah. And you got a little dog who weighs, 5 pounds? I don't understand why you go to Publix 3 times a day. I don't get it.
It's unbelievable the amount of money I'm spending. I'm holding up that whole store and that whole franchise.
Well,
what's your question, baby?
Well, of course, Ira, when you're at Publix, you can pick up Big Storm beer. Smart move by Publix, getting in bed with Big Storm. It's right there in the craft beer, cool, chilled area there where all the beer is. And you've got your Bromosa, your Tangerine IPA. A lot of the Publix have Tropic Pressure, Golden Ale, and of course, there's so many great Big Storm beers. BigStormBrewery.com. We love to see pictures of people drinking Big Storm. You can shoot them at Ira on Twitter, iKaufman76, or at Joe BucksFan. And we, of course, will share it, BigStormBrewery.com. Ira, so the seven seed right now, there are one, two, three, four, five teams that are tied at 6-7 in the NFC. And if so, the Bucks finish number two, they would play one of these teams at home. Who do you want? If the Bucks finish number two, who would you like to see them play? Here are your choices. The Washington Heinekes, the Minnesota Vikings, the Eagles, the Falcons, or the Saints. Those are your picks there. Washington Vikings, Eagles, Falcons, or Saints. They're all tied at 6-7.
What a rogues gallery. I got to go with Atlanta at the one spot. Maybe Washington, two. Philly, three. Steve, who's that fifth team?
Vikings?
Yeah, Vikings. I don't want any part of the Vikings because Cousins, Lee, say what you want. He's having a season. They got Dalvin Cook. He's healthy. He just ran for 205 yards, Lee, and had over 100 against the Bucs last year. And they got two top-notch receivers. Now, they don't play much defense, but Steve, I guess what I'm saying is I think the Niners are the team to avoid, followed by Minnesota and Atlanta. Bring them on. Bring them on to Ray J and dispatch them by 22 points.
Lee, who would you like to see of that bunch if the Bucs get stuck with the number two seed?
Off the top of my head, Philly. They took their foot off the gas against Philly the last time. They were pounding Philly in the first half, and it seemed like they were just trying to kill the clock the second half. So I would say Philly.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game this weekend. You've got Washington at Philly, and the Eagles still have to go to Washington. It's going to get straightened out pretty soon here, but hopefully the Bucs can get to that number one seed, Ira. Our number one seed, Ira, is Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. No joke, floridaselite-restoration.com. That is the website of the best restoration company in the Tampa Bay area. Family owned, owner Josh Martin. It's not a tiny little company. It's not so big that they can't give you personal service, but that's who you call when you have that problem. Before you call your insurance company, whether it's mold, fire, water damage, a storm issue, Florida's Elite Restoration, they're going to come out and give you a free assessment in your home of what's happening, and they'll navigate the insurance company process with you if you need it, if it has to go there. And they're experts at that. Josh Martin, 14 years as an insurance adjuster. He knows the game. He knows the ins and outs. He knows how to make sure you don't get ripped off by your insurance company. But that also makes him extremely valuable to businesses out there that need disaster and restoration services, like property managers or air conditioning contractors who are doing work, maybe changing a heating system or an air conditioning system, and they've got mold issues and related damage. So those companies, if you have that need, Florida's Elite Restoration is there for you, and they'll talk to you about what they offer and how you can have a real honest company working with your clients. Florida's Elite Restoration, call Josh Martin directly. He'll be happy to talk to you at any time, whoever you are, and 24/7 is their response time. Florida's Elite Restoration, that's who you use, Ira, in your time of need. I'll even throw the phone number out there, 727-807-1005, 727-807-1005. I got a question about all that mold in the garage. Stop putting it off. Give them a call. You know, every week it seems that they're coming up with a new record for Tom Brady. This week it was the 700th touchdown if you include the playoffs. The week before, it was the 600th touchdown ball, or 2 weeks before. It's getting a little nuts with these collectibles and stuff. I mean, what does Brady need more money? Is he really going to sit down and be like, wow, I'll never forget my 700th touchdown, including playoffs? It's just the weirdest thing. Well, I don't know. It's making me crazy.
Good point, Steve, because, let's face it. Up to now, before Brady Mania, Lee, when they added up how many touchdowns Brett Favre threw, they talked about regular season, Lee. That was the number. They didn't go and Dan Marino and see what Marino did in the postseason. The number was the regular season, Lee. Nobody talked about adding on another 65 touchdown passes for Brett Favre. It just wasn't done. So, Lee, that's where Brady is right now. I mean, every time he throws a ball, he's the best to ever do it. He's the odds-on favorite to win the MVP. Lee, I have a vote. You know, they're going to want the vote in about a month, and I'm on that panel for Associated Press. It almost always goes to a quarterback, and Kyler Murray's not going to get it, Lee. Maybe if Jonathan Taylor has a big finish, maybe. They certainly would have to make the playoffs, Indy. But Brady's the favorite right now. The accolades just keep coming for Brady. They just keep coming. He's healthy. And, Lee, what was the funniest part of Sunday's pretty tense win? Arians going over to Brady on the bench saying, that's enough of that. No more hits.
Well, that was a great quote he had afterwards. I kind of thought the funniest part, to Steve's point, he's getting tired of all these made-up milestones. When Perriman scored the other night, Bucks had some staffer bolt out into the field and grab the football like it was a winning lottery ticket that someone dropped on the field.
Absolutely,
Ira. It looked like when you're at Golden Corral and they they roll out the last of the coconut shrimp and
last call at Golden Corral, Steve. You're right.
Coconut shrimp last tray. Holy crap!
Look out, everybody! Make way.
You tell your wife to sit down and cover her eyes, right?
Tomorrow is my wife's birthday, gentlemen. So,
what'd you get her? What'd you get her, Ira?
Earrings. She told me what to get. You know, I got no clue. She was very specific. So after I spent that money on the earrings, Steve, we have to have another meeting to talk about bumping my salary because nothing's cheap in this world, gentlemen. Nothing.
Well, I thought you were going to say, Ira, it's a takeoff on the old Don Rickles joke that you've bought her so many rings over the years that when she sits on the beach on your beach chairs that are about to be stolen, she signals ships.
Well,
no, she's not a big ring wearer.
You know what is a little bit inexpensive, Ira, is after you get the Ira Kaufman discount at Bill Curry Ford, you know, things start to look a little bit better. So you can't forget that Ira Kaufman discount. GM Sean Sullivan keeps that in his pocket. It's a picture of Ira. And if you ask for it, he hands you Ira's name. It's got like a little card and it's got like $1,000 off on the back. It's very, very interesting. Sage, I got to ask you this. This is a
Wait a minute, Steve. I'm going to add a little juice to this podcast by telling you this. I forgot. One of the highlights of the St. Thomas trip, the 40th anniversary trip, was 2 days in, we were shopping in St. John. And Lee, I don't want you falling off the couch on this one. She said, what would you think about a diamond earring for yourself, Ira? What would you think? And I said, I've never thought about it. Brooklyn guys don't do that. You could never go back to the old neighborhood. I stood my ground, Isbits. I stood my ground. Nobody's puncturing my earlobes over there, Isbits. I get it. How do you like that? I get it, Stevie.
Maybe you could go back to the famous mustache of 2012.
You never forget a thing. God damn it. You don't forget a thing.
We still have that picture.
You know what kind of ribbing I took that year, Stevie? It was unbelievable.
We still have that picture in the Joe Bucks fan archives, Ira, so behave yourself. Behave yourself. I got to ask you guys this. This was an issue last week. I always find it ridiculous just because I don't think history has borne it out, and I think it played out yet again. Of course, you know, the game, 78 degrees or so, modest humidity, not a super dry day, but, you know, just a warm day. Couldn't you make the argument that the Bills were better prepared for the heat?
Yes, you could. I mentioned it in my column as a throwaway line. Lee, the Bills looked like the fresher team until Perriman took it to the house. Boy, what a terrible loss that would have been, Lee. Really crippling loss if the Bucs would have blown that 21-point lead and a 17-point lead going into the fourth quarter, I believe. I know somebody turned the game off and went somewhere when it was 27-10, and when they got to the destination, they looked at their phone and ran home to watch the last couple of minutes. Buffalo certainly did not wilt in the second half of that game.
No, they didn't, and Steve's right. They looked like the more prepared team. I thought maybe, just maybe, and I'm generally with Steve when it comes to let's prepare for the heat. But I thought maybe, just maybe, you know, it's December. Buffalo just got that nasty game that they played on a short week against the Belichick's when it was like 60-mile-an-hour gale. I thought maybe, just maybe, with the short week, and that was a physical game, that I thought maybe the humidity might get to them. It obviously didn't. You know, let's use the heat as a home field advantage. Has been a total crock in the history of the Bucks, with rare exceptions. I think the Bears one time came down here and melted early in the season once. But here's my favorite example. Raheem Morris's first year, he kept bragging, we're going to use the heat to our advantage. We're going to embrace the heat. We're going to embrace the suck. And it's going to help us. He went on and on and on, all training camp, all preseason about that. Season opener was at home against the Cowboys. And I guess someone forgot to tell Raheem, it gets hot in Texas too. And the Bucks got absolutely seal clubbed by the Cowboys.
Who's the quarterback that year before they finally started using Josh Freeman? Who started that? Leftwich.
Yeah, you had Leftwich and then the Josh Johnson experience.
Oh, jeez, Leftwich, unbelievable. Hey, Steve, let's mention, because they deserve some accolades, a couple of guys that played really well, that are playing well. Godwin, he's been tremendous. 25 catches the last 2 weeks, unbelievable. Owns the middle of the field. The guy can do everything. And Lee, I like the way Shepard's coming on, Lee. I like it. He's looping around. He dipped inside for another sack. That's the old Shaq. He looks very spry right now. Lee, he could be set up for a big finish.
That's a great point about Shaq, and I'll point out Evans. That catch that he made from that perfect throw from Brady, that was just an unbelievable play. That was an absolutely unbelievable play. I really don't know what was better, the catch or the throw. The throw had to be perfect for a touchdown. Had to be perfect. If that wasn't perfect, it was either picked off or it was incomplete, one of the two. It had to be perfect, and it was. And Evans, if you look at the replay, he caught that sucker with his fingertips. It was starting to slide out of his hands, and he must have unbelievably strong fingers. He squeezed that sucker and kept it in his hands. That was just an unreal play. By the way, real quick, Iris, CBS thought the one-yard run by Fournette to get a first down in overtime was the play of the game. I understand it was important. That happened like three plays before Berryman. I understand that was an important play. I get it. I can't call that the play of the game. You know, I would take the Evans catch from the perfect throw from Brady. I would take playoff Lenny's run, the Packers sweep, when it was like perfect blocking from everybody, including Tyler Johnson. And I would take, of course, Perryman's touchdown. All those plays resulted in 6 points. So I can't necessarily say a one-yard run was the most important play of the game whenever other plays, more spectacular plays, that also resulted in points.
I'm with you on that, Lee. And one more point that Lee's mentioning with that Fournette run that they lauded so much about second effort. Steve, that's another example of the Bucks running the ball after the first two quarters and getting very little push up front, which they did on that play. No push, Steve.
Not enough. I mean, not enough when you have a lead like that and you're just thinking, hey guys, let's trade threes for sevens and we'll be out of here before you know it. You know, I mean, they were blowing them out. I mean, it is a little disturbing. I get that Josh Allen's a special player, but probably most disturbing to me, Ira, and the play of the game for me was just before that Carlton Davis breakup that you talked about earlier on 3rd and 3, which, you know, touchdown there wins the game for Buffalo. The reason there was a 3rd and 3 is because Levante David caught Josh Allen and pushed him out of bounds. And anybody who watches the replay of that is going to see, and I'm going to say it, you're going to see serial loafer Joe Tryon Soyinka jogging like he just finished the marathon. At least
about usually hustles.
Usually, but you can't hustle 90% of the time in the NFL. And this guy goes, yep. He goes into brain farts sometimes. And for a rookie who doesn't even play half the snaps, it's like, dude, you are an immense athletic talent. Just play to the whistle. We've seen it over and over this year. It's not like he's not effective at all. It's not like he doesn't care, but he's got something mentally that causes him to just kind of let up sometimes. And it's right there on the video for anybody to watch.
Well, then that's a perfect example of why JPP, even though he's not himself, and you could argue he should not be out there. There's a reason why he's out there, and Joe Tryon is not. Steve brought up Joe Tryon, you brought up Shaq Barrett. I'll let you in on something. A week or two ago, I just happened to glance at what other rookie pass rushers the Bucs have had in the last 20 years or so have done, and I saw Tryon's numbers. And it made me want to grab a bottle of Pepto-Bismol. That's without context. He had the context. He's not starting. He's not getting that many snaps. Okay, fine. His numbers shouldn't be that good. Gaines Adams started a lot. Adrian Claiborne started a lot. So they should have more numbers than Tryon. But then I started doing a little bit of math. And it's scary when I do math. I'll be the first one to admit it. It's scary. So I started calculating the number of quarterback pressures divided by number of snaps. So you basically come up with an average, like average number of quarterback pressures per snap. I'm confusing right there, but I just did some math. Number of snaps, I divided into the number of quarterback pressures. Maybe I'm saying it backwards. I'm not a mathematician. I admit that.
I hope you don't do your own taxes, DeKemper. I hope.
Hell no, I got a guy that saves me hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on taxes. So
you may continue.
Take a guess who has the best quarterback pressure average on the team.
You're about to tell me Joe Tryon.
Yeah. Just a hair above Shaq. And this will sadden you. It saddened me at least. Of the starting front five of the Bucs, two outside linebackers, the three defensive linemen. Guess who has the worst average for quarterback pressures?
I'd say JPP.
Yeah, and that's bad.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this about Tryon and the numbers you threw out there, Lee. Tryon, he was starting for JPP when JPP was hurt, and he was playing a little bit better as a starter. And most of the numbers that Tryon has put up this year, they came against New England. He had two sacks, four quarterback hits. He was all over the place. Since that game, I mean, he's got like one sack in his last 9 or 10 games. I think it's 9 games. Something happened to the guy where he's not as effective, even though he's playing less snaps and should be a lightning bolt out there. Something's faded in the last 8 games or so. I'm not sure what it is, but hopefully
there's a book out on him.
Hopefully they can figure it out, whatever it is. Because you look at a guy that Sean Sullivan loves in his Best in Class podcast, a guy I've seen on a few games now, this first-round pick that Miami's got, Jalen Phillips, is a pass rusher going the other direction. He plays part-time, and he's starting to completely explode. He's got like 8.5 sacks now, you know, like 20 quarterback hits, and he's just a beast, drafted a little bit before Tryon, a guy we wrote about on the site when the Bucs were looking at pass rushers. So I would just love to see Tryon be getting better, and hopefully that's coming. I still have a lot of hope that that light bulb can go on for him in a little better way as we close it out.
Steve, I'm glad you mentioned Josh Allen's 7-yard run. I can't remember if it came on first down or second down, but and the play by Levante David Lee. When he started taking off on that run, I thought he was going to score. He had hurt the Bucs all day long on the ground, obviously, over 100 yards rushing, 300 yards passing. The way that they broke down defensively, I thought Allen was going to reach the end zone on that play.
Yeah, you know, the Bucs defense, it's sad that whenever they lose a starting corner, I mean, it's like Mike Smith got let in the building.
Yeah, you're right, Ira. You're right. If he had gotten past David, he would have encountered Carlton Davis with a little head of steam. He never would have been able to to stop him, you know, cold in his tracks. You know, Josh Allen's just too big for that compared to Davis. But exciting as hell game. And you know what? At the end of the day, the Bucs got off to a big lead. And they, no matter what they say, they took their foot off the gas a little bit. They just eased up. We've seen them do it over and over again. Lee mentioned the Eagles game. They continually get big leads at home. I think
They did the same thing, Steve, in the first game against the Falcons. That was a blowout.
Yeah, same stuff we've seen. So, but I'm excited by what Shaq's doing. He's getting better. He's got the 9 sacks now, but he's coming on. It took him later in the year last year to really come on, and they need him desperately because JPP, it's kind of sad to watch, and Tryon isn't there yet. And as Bruce Arians really emotionally said today on his radio show, Ira, I wrote it up at joebucksfan.com. It was probably as emotional as he got in his 20 minutes talking. He said we had, quote, 20 unblocked blitzers that didn't get home in that game against the Bills. 20 guys, might have been two on the same play at times, but wow. 20 total players, he said, were unblocked on a blitz and didn't get home. And, you know, he said, you know, it's a credit to Todd Bowles for having such a great plan, but these guys have got to finish. And we've heard that all year long where, hey, they just didn't finish it. You know, they just didn't bring him to the ground, or they just didn't, they got deked out at the last second. So at least Devin White got to ride the horse, but they got to finish more of those blitzes.
And Lee, when you bring extra people, you know, the downside is when you don't get there and there's a breakdown, you got less people in the back. And that really hurt when Allen broke through the line of scrimmage. No question about it. Lee, we'll talk later in the week about the upcoming Saints game. It's trying time. And Lee, just to give the fans a taste, I can't argue with your main point, Lee. This has not been a good matchup for the Bucs. And Steve, I'll say this, and you know I'm right. They could have very easily lost the playoff game in the Superdome if Antoine Winfield doesn't make that play. They were getting outplayed at that point. And that was during the Bucs' historic, you know, push towards the Super Bowl when they were the hottest team in the league, and the Saints were beating them. You can't assume they're going to beat up on the Saints even with Taysom Hill under center. You can't.
No, unfortunately not. Ira, before we end this podcast, I'm going to ask you, this is the life I live. I'm thinking football all the time. I'm always thinking football. And I got to thinking about who was the worst owner in NFL history. And there's so many you could choose from. And I know a lot of people would say Hugh Culverhouse. Well, at least Hugh Culverhouse saw some success. I would say Bill Bidwell, because he moved a team twice. And until his son took over the operation, that was a moribund franchise. Moribund. They never did anything. But this is my epiphany. There's only one man who lived on the face of the earth that not only moved his team from a football hotbed, he also fired arguably the two greatest coaches who ever lived, Paul Brown and Bill Belichick. That would be Art Modell.
And that's why Art Modell doesn't have a bust in Canton, Lee.
Or should he?
And, you know, Lee, he's got some assets. He's got some assets in his quiver because he was the main guy for the TV contracts, and he did a hell of a job in the 60s in that regard and helped accelerate the rise of the NFL into the number one pro sport. But, Lee, that move out of Baltimore, you know, to Baltimore from Cleveland, nobody's ever forgiven him for that, and you're right. He's fired some of the all-time coaches. You know, Lee, I'll tell you who's gaining traction on Art Modell. Art Modell might have to move over for Daniel Snyder. That guy's a snake. That guy's a bum.
Yeah.
And they got to get out of the National Football League. He's a disgrace.
If these reports from the Amazon Post are true, I don't know how you can keep the guy as an owner. If they ran off what Jerry Richards did was unseemly. But it sure as hell doesn't even compare to what Snyder's done.
Well,
the guy has no redaiming. He's got no redaeming qualities, as but you do. You got to.
Yeah, he knows how to make money, but that's it.
Well, you just called them a snake, Ira. You don't have to follow up on that. That's the bottom of the food chain there. Look, I want to, before we head out, I do want to say Lee's on the money. It's an important concept for this week that even though the Saints have lost 5 out of 6, even though they suck, I'm sorry, they're just not a good team this year. We can pretend that they're last year's Saints, but the Bucs have to get over that hump and knock the Saints off. And frankly, they also, if they can't get over the hump this week with the Saints, then you give the Saints a lot of life to end up in the playoffs, and then you're going to have to probably beat them again. And if you can't beat them now, then you got a problem. So this is the time to take them out. The Saints finish up with Miami, Carolina, and Atlanta. If you don't beat the Saints here, they might finish 10-7, and all of a sudden you're playing them again. And it's really critical to just get this off their back and just really punch these guys in the mouth. Hopefully they can play a 60-minute game. We really need to see one of those, Ira.
You know, Derek Brooks, I was talking to him today, Steve. He feels the same way as you do. By the way, he picked the Saints to win this game. I picked the Bucks because I always pick the Bucks, Lee, basically. And the Bucks are the better team, Lee. But Brooks picked the Saints, and I'll tell you what, Brooks, you know, every time the Bucks lose, Brooks has picked that game right. I mean, he picked the Rams, you know, he's gotten things right. He knows his favorite football team like nobody's business. And, Lee, what a beautiful way to knock the Saints off that four-year run by hitting them square in the eye face-to-face. That's the way to do it.
That's one way to do it, yeah.
If I have to watch some stupid Twitter video of a Saints celebration in the locker room on Sunday night at midnight or something, I'm just going to vomit all over the place, Ira. So hopefully that won't happen. Everybody, drink your Big Storm beer. Head to Bill Curry Ford. Take an Uber if you're drinking, but head to Bill Curry Ford. And Sean Sullivan is waiting for you. BillCurryFord.com. And our thanks, of course, to our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration. They're your peace of mind anytime you have that problem in your home, fire, water, flood, mold, whatever it is, that's who you call, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Ira, send us out with a word of wisdom.
I'm taking my wife out to a swank restaurant. I will be emailing DeKemper the name of the restaurant and the address so he can send over a nice bottle of wine.
Waffle House in Hudson?
Waffle House in Hudson.